Welcome back to That You May Grow, a podcast here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. My name is Jared Hammond. I'm one of the hosts and ministers here at the Mount Vernon Church of Christ. I'm here with my fellow co-host and fellow minister, Preston McElyea.
Good to be back, as always.
We enjoy the opportunities to come together to share God's Word with you, as well as bring in guests. And today we have a special treat. We have two guests with us. We have our brother Chris Groda from the North Jefferson Congregation. He is a minister there. He's joining us today on our podcast.
Good morning.
Nice to have you, brother.
It's good to be here with you.
We appreciate you coming over.
We're glad to be here.
We also have with us Kevin Rhodes from the Brown Trail School of Preaching. He is a director there at the Brown Trail School of Preaching. So we have two good brothers, friends, and fellow ministers in the faith here with us this morning to discuss a very important topic. Brother Rhodes? No good morning?
No good morning.
No good morning.
I'm not awake yet.
Not awake? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you've had a long week. You've been doing a gospel meeting this week.
I have been so tired, yes.
He's got gospel meeting tired.
Yes, no. It is good to see everyone. Or I'm not sure what that word is, to see everyone here. I see you.
You see me? Yeah. Well, I don't know that anybody else can see us, but we see each other, and we're glad to be here.
No one else can see it, but Jared and Kevin, y'all are wearing the same shirt today.
That's
did
right.
Did y'all plan that out or something?
We did. We're wondering what happened with you and what the problem is.
My Brown Trail shirt is hanging up in my closet.
Oh, okay.
I did. I actually specifically went to the closet, and I said, you know what? Kevin's going to be here today. I'm wearing my Brown Trail logo shirt.
I need to get some Brown Trail School of Preaching Friends of the School shirts.
Okay. I'll talk to Caleb. He's in that.
Do you want a backpack?
We have backpacks.
We do have merch. I can have my shirt and feel like I'm part of the gang.
We do have merch. It's true.
It is a nice backpack. I saw the backpack. He got it before we graduated. It was very nice.
See, when I went through school, we had a shirt.
That was
it. And then right before I graduated, we got cups.
Yep.
And that was it. And now you got jackets. You got backpacks.
Oh, there was a nice fleece jacket.
Fleece. I like my fleece.
And it was a little bit of a different blue, too. You know, it's like one of those specialty items there at the end of our, at the close of our school year. So that's pretty nice. Well, it's good to be here this morning with each one of you. And one question we like to ask as we get going into this episode, what size shoe do y'all wear? Chris?
Depending on the shoe, 10 or 10 and a half.
10 or 10 and a half, okay.
Yeah, that's about where I am.
About the same, both a 10 to a 10 and a half. Well, they say that you cannot get to know a man until you walked a mile in his shoe. So we're going to slip on a 10 and a half each, and we're going to take a walk in the shoes of Chris and Kevin and get to know them a little bit and discuss a very important topic, and that is gospel preachers. Now, Kevin, you have much time invested in training up gospel preachers. You know, I don't know, looking at the bigger picture, you know, in many fields, people will say, well, there's always been a greater need, or maybe there's a greater need now, but do you feel like that there is a greater need now for preachers than there has been in the past?
I think so, and more specifically, I think it matters that we are training the right kind of preachers. I think that we both have a situation where people feel freer to speak due to the social media and just people kind of being out there. And the problem is that it creates a false sense of security for some people of going out and preaching without any training. And that can cause other problems because it's hard to explain the behind-the-scenes work of preaching, as you know. And I think that we need to do a better job of explaining those parts of preaching, but also preparing men to deal with the kind of issues that we are having today. You have a lot of congregations that are looking, but a lot of them are also not really ready and prepared to work alongside a preacher. They're not prepared to pay a preacher what he needs. And so I think it's a joint reason why we have people that are not encouraging their children, their young men, to be preachers. And so there's a shortage there. I think they look out and it's not respected like it used to be. So there are a lot of issues there. And if we're going to do the work, that's how I think we need to look at it. Is there enough work for a need for gospel preachers? I wish we could double the number of gospel preachers we had out there right now, because I think it would make a tremendous difference.
Yeah, Chris, I know you've been working with the congregation there at North Jefferson in Mount Pleasant for, what is it, about 15 years?
I think so. Yes, in January it was 15.
So about 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And just being in that one community for that period of time, kind of what have you seen as far as the impact of preaching or even just the need for good, sound preaching within that community over the course of that time?
Well, of course, there is always a need in the community. The community, in my opinion, needs to hear from the Lord's church on every Bible subject. We need to have a presence in the community. And if you can't have it as a congregation, you know, through your PR work or whatever it is you're trying to do, your outreach, then the members of the church individually must be salt and light. And if you can get them to speak on behalf of the Lord and people will associate them with the Lord's church, I think that's just wonderful. Hmm. But, you know, preaching, and just in the local sense, when I walked into that situation, that congregation was started with a commitment to truth. It came out of another, unfortunately, came out of another congregation over a doctrinal dispute, and so the leadership and the group of people that formed that congregation were in revival as far as we're going to get back to the Bible, get back to the truth, we're going to follow the pattern, we're going to do what's right. And so then they hired, preachers that were sound in the faith. They had Tom Waycaster. There was the first guy that was the full-time dude. And then, you know, when Tom left, then they brought David McCain in, you know, another soldier of the cross. And then you had Lee Moses as an associate there, and you had Johnny Ramsey as an associate. And then, so when I walked into that situation, the path had been paved. A lot of the the growing pains or the adjustments that would naturally take place in a new congregation, just trying to create an identity for themselves within the community, that had already the truth and the soundness and the doctrinal things were already in place by the time I got there. So I stepped into something very easy as far as preaching the truth on any subject was a green light. But in the community, we were still building our reputation. And that can be sometimes difficult. And how do you create opportunities to be more recognizable within the community? You've got to have a way to be public with your evangelism.
Especially because people are, they especially will remember bad things for decades, and they'll forget forget good things in a second. Yeah. It's a real challenge to do that, even if everything about the that happened bad isn't even longer there. It doesn't matter, and so people need to understand that, and that's why I think it's important for us to convince our Christians that their presence is important, because that's a steadying influence for good and for visibility and for light and salt, as you mentioned, that can be a consistency that the community has no matter what. If there's a problem in the congregation, if something happens, that you can overcome it when you have a greater environment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why we as preachers have to make sure that we are building the reputation and the examples of the members, because if they rely so much on us, it can go, one little thing happens, and I'm not talking about in our lives, but I'm talking about something happens and we go away, then the next guy has to start from scratch.
Well, and for years they had a face of the church, Brother Duncan, and he was, you know, he did funerals for people in and out mm-hmm. of the church for years, and it was just, he was a key figure. And you asked the community, well, what other members of the church were you aware of, you know, and they might have known a few, but, you know, this one preacher was basically the face and reputation of the church within the community, and it took years to establish that, if that's what you're trying to establish. On the other hand, if you're trying to establish a reputation within the community through individual members, which is ideally what you would want, there's no quick way to establish that.
Right.
Well, how does that come about, you know, through preaching and teaching? What type of lessons does that take to try to help build up the congregation in that, but thinking as well and working to help maintain a good reputation and build up a good reputation? Just in the culture we live, there are certain subjects that may, I don't know that to say that may create bad press is the right word, but the reception from some in the community who may not have a good backing in the truth might not always appreciate what the truth has to say.
I think for one, we do need to overcome some, shall we say, poor methods of communicating the truth in the past, so that people get used to, and starting with our own example of presenting it, to convince them that the truth can be taught and can be communicated in very positive ways, and that you need to see it in a positive way. And a lot of times I think people only see it as almost an antagonistic kind of thing, an us versus them version of they already believe something, they're wrong, and I'm going to prove it to them, instead of they're missing out on something so good, let me show it to them. And that if in our preaching we can demonstrate that in a loving way, and then have, I would suggest maybe, and I know Chris has done some of this, but some additional kind of classes that are specific to method that encourage people in how they interact to recognize that these are people that you care about. You need to treat them like that you care about them. And from there, to begin conversations in such a way that they see in you something and that you can talk about what you have going on and what the church has to offer. And when they maybe want to counter or something, then you kind of in a very, very nice way and saying, well, I think that's one of the reasons why we needed to study together, is that why is that so different? Have you ever wondered that? And we ought to do a better job of creating questions for them rather than trying to provide answers for questions they're not asking. And I think that method would do a lot more of getting people curious about the truth. If you look at how Jesus operated, first thing he does is he tries to establish interest. And he's trying to get interest and then build on the interest. And Chris was talking about some of the outreach and the PR work. You've got to have people's attention for anything you say to matter. And so we need to be mindful of that. We don't back away from the truth, but we should present it in the very best light possible. And people who haven't seen that done, it's not their fault they don't know how to do it. So some of our training is very practical in just helping that out. And I also think that bringing them along and showing that to them, bringing them into conversations that we're having, taking them out to lunch, starting conversations with people that you meet in the process. You go to Bible studies, show them how you can do that and keep it very low-key and yet learning environment, and just be introducing them. It's not going to be a fast thing. I think we all want too much speed to what takes relationships, and that just didn't work.
Yeah. This is like the compassion cards and the evangelism model that we're adopting over there with House to House, Heart to Heart. And it would be great if at the end of sending compassion cards, you could just run out to the house and have a quick visit with the people you've been, trying to you know, influence and just say, hey, can we have that Bible study and just get right into it. That's not, I don't think it works that way. I mean, it does with some people, and maybe they're ready, but sometimes you got to build a relationship a little bit longer, and I don't want that to discourage brethren from being compassionate or being prayerful for the people right. that they're writing cards to, but that's just a slice of the overall evangelistic pie. It's just something else that we can do to try to get a foot in the door. But really, every relationship, we'll see some public preaching and some public responses in the Bible. You see an awful lot of personal connections. You know, it was Paul coming in contact with Lydia, who then got her household involved, mm-hmm. and the jailer, you know, got his household involved, and even Cornelius, you know, he got his friends, his close friends, and some other folks, associates there. That is a personal scope of influence that a person that has an interest in. I mean, you look at Jesus and the Samaritan woman. Jesus has a conversation with a Samaritan woman and starts talking about living water and gives her a little sip with that husband topic that he brought up. And then, of course, the big elephant in the room about the big difference between Samaritans and Jews. Mm-hmm. But she went back to her community and she said, oh, I think I found the Messiah. You know, just y'all come check this thing out. And I don't know if we're really fully relying upon those other people that we're trying to develop interest in to help sow the seed. And maybe we're living in a time where there is such a skepticism or a lack of interest that we're having to work harder. I know, and you know this as well, it is harder to secure and keep a Bible study appointment today than it was 20 years ago. Yeah. It's definitely more difficult. And I don't know if it's the community. I know when my best evangelism experiences have been in De Leon, Texas, and it was right after 9/11. But I was already having some good success there in a small town, and just was everybody knew everybody, and it was just easy. I don't know why it was. Just we just got Bible studies and baptisms and restorations.
I think people are distracted. So you think about what happened. Not just two things. Number one, the rise of social media, which happened not long after all that, which you've got people who are so consumed with social media, they can't take their eyes off their phone to keep it on the road. They're walking around in malls and falling into fountains because they're so consumed with this. It's a distraction. And it's a distraction when we're at home. It's a distraction everywhere we go. I'm on social media. It's built, the algorithms are built to keep you watching and keep you reading. And if anything, maybe we've got to learn a little bit from it and try to figure out how do we create a Bible study algorithm for people. I don't know, but we ought to be thinking about it. I think that's happened. But plus, people don't talk as much because of the divisive nature of society in which there is a fear that any conversation with a stranger can be ugly in 2 seconds. And how are you going to get a Bible study with somebody when they're afraid?
Scared to talk to you.
You're going to somehow go off on them politically.
Well, and I think that, you know, Jeff and I were just talking about that this morning, how difficult it is. It's been easier to train the members of the church to how to do Bible studies and get them involved in personal ministry, which is what we should be doing anyway. But it's been easier for them to carry the Bible studies than it is for me personally, mm-hmm. because once people find out, you know, I'm meeting somebody in the community and we're having a great talk and all that, and then, oh, and by the way, what do you do for a living? Yep. And I tell them, well, I'm a gospel preacher. Well, oh, that's nice to meet you. Bye-bye. You know, and
yeah.
and the conversation's over. Well, there's a little intimidation, I think, even in visitors that keep coming back to the Lord's church. And they're prime Bible study prospects. And we have members now that can get that done easier mm-hmm. than if I approach them. I would love to have all the Bible studies I can, and I used to have a bunch more. But within the last 2 or 3 years when we've done this personal evangelism training, I've had less Bible studies and the members have had more.
Which is a good thing. It's helping train them and providing them with those opportunities.
It is good, but it's also kind of like, well, what am I useful
for? I would say that is actually growth in leadership to understand that if you're training five people to do five studies, that's better than you doing one, even for the time you're allotted. Your experience of going through that, that's kind of how I've felt for most of my life, is trying to get a Bible study. For me, it's been very difficult. Again, like you said, I would try to keep the fact that I was a preacher quiet long as I could. And I think the reason why is that people assume that if you're a preacher, number one, your motives are not pure.
Yeah.
Because you somehow get some gain. I don't know if they think that we get a commission on how many people we put in. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I never thought of that.
You're bringing in money into the treasury. I don't know. I also think that people, they just know that they don't know the Bible that well, and they assume you do, and you're taught to be a clever talker.
Yeah, you're going
to. And so you're going to have all the tricks, and they're not going to know, and they don't want to be easily led. Mm-hmm. And so they're not interested because of that. Someone they know in a completely separate setting as just a friend, coworker, that they feel as more of an equal is always going to be a better person to do a Bible study. It, even if it's just let them lead. Oddly enough, I think they're the one to lead, and I will be back up as the silent partner. And if there's a question comes up, I can handle it, but let them take the lead, and that's a better focus.
I do. I think that's totally the way to do it. But the reality is, there's still a mentality in the church that says, "Well, we pay you for what?
I know, yes.
We're getting paid for what? What are you doing?
Oh no, I've got an answer for
we
that.
We need
one.
To see pictures
I'm
of you doing work.
I'm getting paid to train you and get you to work. Yeah. And that, because that is part of it. You're right, though. That
it's just a psychology.
It is, and that goes back to the training. I think part of the training has been too much about you doing the work of the church rather than you doing the work of a preacher, which is communicating and motivating the church to do the work of the church.
Yeah. Well, we've empowered, I think to a greater degree, the North Jefferson congregation to do what it needs to do. They can do everything. They don't really... unless they just want to prepare, they can start preparing sermons and do a rotation if they wanted to eliminate that, my job. But I think they could do it fine. Paul was in Ephesus for 3 years and 3.5 years, whatever, and then he was gone on to the next thing. And, he did some training, and they had to get to the point where they were sufficient. He left Timothy there to take care of some work.
One of the things I remember from school that always stood out to me going through, I don't remember if it was in Nehemiah in the leadership class or if it was in the local work with Brother Roy Gafford, but one of the things was that the goal should always be to leave the congregation better than when you came in, but at the same time where they can function without you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you can leave and everything still goes smoothly and you're not there, then that ought to be a good sign and a good feeling. Well,
I think, a lot like what Chris was saying, even with the way that they're training, the members over there at North Jefferson, that is producing more people that are able and capable, of setting up those studies on their own and reaching out and evangelizing within the community. And, another aspect of it in bringing up Timothy, I just wonder, how many times through y'all's career ministry, if you will, have y'all had those kind of Timothy type brethren that you put a lot of time in and really tried to train up in ministry? Have y'all had any of those in your...
I've had some. I actually want to. I'll answer that if you remind me. But I also want to bring up the difference. You are in a position of working with someone else. Not a lot of people get that. The time I did, I brought someone in who is fresh out of school to be an intern, and I had taught him originally. I'd baptized him, and though I should say that his wife did the Bible study for him. And it was a great experience of just letting him know some of the ins and outs. And so the difference, say, for example, we're talking about going back to the original question about do we need more preachers, is I think we can find – there are certain congregations where we could find someone to give a sermon. giving multiple sermons that are constructed over time to grow people at different levels and can hit everybody in the congregation consistently, I think that takes another level of skill. But also, the more growth there is, the more is required of the preacher. And the more successful the members are in their work, the more need there is for more men, to be able to rise up and do some of that. And I was wondering just what your experience has been of what the benefits are of having someone else to work with in this, because that was not my experience for most of my preaching life. I preached full-time from essentially with one brief stay at another school from 1992 up until, let me see here, 2016, and I was the only preacher. And that meant I had every sermon. I had usually every class as well as bulletin and all the visiting and the evangelism. And I'll tell you, there's no way you can accomplish what you need to do as a preacher. I'm not talking about the work of the church. Just as a preacher, as one man trying to do all that. You're having to take some kind of thing is getting left behind, and you're just kind of choosing, and you're having to choose. And what I did is I had to choose, okay, what can I accomplish by empowering other people? That's what I had to do. And evangelism was one of those. I had to choose, what am I the only one here that can do? So I concentrated on those things and then worked on empowering people who could do other things and then to serve as more of a advisory capacity, right, and a trainer and a mentor on those things. And I still didn't feel like I was enough, that I felt like there was so much potential there. So I would like to open the floor to you guys. If you have comments about the benefit and how working together could benefit, because as I said, I think we need to double the number of people. This is one of the reasons why. I'm convinced that, for example, and my preference would be that there needs to be someone committed to edification and someone committed to evangel. I would not have it be seniors and youth. For me, it would be edification and evangelism, and there would be crossover. I think it'd be unhealthy not to have crossover, but that would be the aim as far as the work goes, because benevolence crosses both of those two. Mm-hmm. And in making that happen, but as our teaching role, I think every congregation would benefit from having two men, one that was totally there not only to do the evangelism but to be the training in evangelism, be a mentor in evangelism, and another man who is doing more of the preaching and more of the teaching but also training of the congregation to do those kind of things. And then the interaction they have, there's always going to be this nice little level, probably a third of the work that's going to be done jointly. So I want some comments from you on how that works for you and what you see as the benefits, or if you have drawbacks, I'll let y'all hash that out.
I know at least for myself and Jared, it definitely lightens the load week to week as far as Sundays go. The way that we do our services here in Mount Vernon, of course, we have our Sunday morning Bible class, and then our normal worship service, and then the evening is another Bible class, and then our Wednesday evening Bible class. And right now, the way that we've got it set up is I'm teaching the Sunday morning class, and then Jared and I alternate in the pulpit every week as far as who preaches for the worship service. And then several of our men have a rotation right now for that Sunday evening class. Jared's teaching Wednesday night. So it gives us a better balance as far as time that we can devote to the specific lesson or class we have. But because we don't have the load of all the classes, all the sermons, it also opens up more opportunities for the both of us to be able to get out in the community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, we've found really good opportunity just here in Mount Vernon. I know Jared goes up to the jail on Thursday evenings and teaches a class. We're able to get into the senior center here in town and just serve and wash dishes. We just got the opportunity to get into one of the nursing homes in town to start a regular Bible study there. So it's opened up that possibility for us, but at the same time, just to have somebody else here in the office that we can bounce ideas past and try to think about, okay, knowing the direction that we're looking to go, is this lesson, is this class, is it going to help us move in that direction? You know, these application points, is this going to be pointed enough to get the point across, but at the same time not to not to throw anything out there that we're not ready for quite yet?
Yeah.
And that's a blessing right there. Of course, for Jared and I, we're both fresh out of school. It's easy to get a little bit overzealous, I guess, and think at times that we understand what we're doing better than we actually do. So it is nice to be able to have that voice of reason there that's kind of like, well, have you thought about this? And yep. And of course, you know, at times to pick Chris Grota's brain over here and see how things are going over there in Mount Pleasant just down the road. And that's another unique blessing that we have here is so many good sound congregations within a very close radius.
Yeah.
And really good relationships with the other preachers in the area who have much more experience than myself or Jared. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where my mind is on that. I don't know if Jared
I'm
has
definitely the rookie
else.
On the rookie in the group here. I guess I have less time in ministry than each of us, but I've definitely enjoyed, you know, having the opportunity to work with Preston. And it does. It opens up opportunity for a lot of other works. You know, also the Lambs Academy and going out to the home recovery and teaching classes out there. You know, if you add up all the different areas where we're reaching out throughout the week, if it was just one man here trying to cover all the other stuff, there's no way that we can also do all those things plus this podcast and everything else we do. So it makes it a whole lot better for both of us, I think. And not just for us, but I think also for the congregation. You know, you're hearing from different people. You're hearing from different men. It's not the same one every Sunday. I think it spreads the work out very well. And so far, I think Preston and I worked really well together. So that's a benefit.
And another thing, too, is the congregation here, we're blessed with a good number who are mm-hmm. Always ready and willing to step in and to lead Bible studies. And you know, there have been times where Jared and I, we might get a study going just because of the initial contact and everything, but we're able to quickly be able to bring somebody else into the picture, and it might be, you know, we'll lead one or two of those studies and then be able to let one of our other members pick that up and to be able to help those in the community maybe meet someone else within the congregation, you know, if it is a situation where we're the ones who maybe had the initial contact or whoever brought them to us may not be ready yet to lead that particular study. But that's a wonderful blessing because it still allows us to be able to go and to do some of these other things out in the community or continue to help teach and build up the congregation in other areas.
So in your situation, you really do pretty much share everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Chris, your situation is a little bit different than that with you and Jeff. How do y'all work things?
Well, we share coffee and snacks. And no. So Jeff is... he is the minister over education. We call him, probably just for our listening audience, the education minister. He's the one that coordinates family life, church family life activities, edification, you know, fun stuff that we'll do. And somebody's got to be the coordinator of all that, and he gets to do all that. But he prepares all the Bible class material or secures it and synthesizes it and gets, you know, helps the teachers prepared. The Bible class model has changed over the years, and in the early days, they were writing, I don't know that they were writing all their own curriculum, but they were compiling their own curriculum on different subjects, and so we have filing cabinets of all kinds of things on different grade levels, and there was a kind of a schedule that you'd follow, a rotation. I'm not sure that we're deviated from the rotation of what needs to be taught as we go through the Bible every 4 years or on, you know, some subjects for the younger kids every 2 years. Mm-hmm. But somebody's got to keep up with all that. And I never had done that. Even when I moved to North Jefferson, there was a deacon that was in charge of all of that. And I did not have anything to do with that except show up and teach my class. And I didn't teach all the classes. I only had one class that I taught a week. And Sundays I just sat in somebody's class. I got to go to class myself. So that was a luxury that I'd never been afforded. And then the first 5 years I was there, we didn't have an associate minister, but there, you know, other than Bible Bowl and
I wrote the test for that, still do, and, you know, sort of lead the discussion on summer youth series, and that's not like a huge burden or anything, because most everybody that comes to the table brings the ideas, and they basically set the agenda, and I just write it down and print the calendar. That's not a big, fat, hairy deal to me. And then the other responsibility was getting Vacation Bible School together. And what I had found is that if you will just open up the floor for discussion, all the volunteers are at the meeting, and they are going to make they're going to make the VBS what it is. Mm-hmm. They're going to pick the topic. You're going to get, you know, all the Bible lessons together. Like I said, we weren't buying curriculums and using stuff. We were creating our own stuff and our own lessons, and still do, with the exception of the 2 years we did like a Creation Museum from Apologetics Press. That was pretty awesome. But when you let the brethren run with something, mm-hmm. and they will think through all the details, and all you got to do is be there with your dry erase marker and a whiteboard and write it all down. And so that was the way I handled it. And then when we got JJ in and subsequently Jeff, they've taken and controlled all that part. And so I don't have to worry about that. This frees me up for sermons, Bible classes, my community involvement, and trying to get out there and hustle studies and get people involved and interested in church just like anybody else. And I feel like I spend a lot of time talking to people about the Lord and trying to get them interested and inviting them to, you know, to church services. Mm-hmm. And every now and then I'm lucky and I catch a bite and people come, and it looks, you know, it looks really good. It's nice to have that extra person there in ministry, because it's another soul-minded individual using his scope of influence within the community, yeah. to hustle Bible studies and help grow the church. It's great. I can remember, and this was the other thing, we're talking about training members to do the work. This is the only church I've ever worked with where I've done that. It's the only church that I've worked with that had an eldership that wanted that.
Yeah.
And you can't go above your elders in a given congregation. It's got to be from the top down. And in other places, I did great works, and I really was out there all the time from sunup to sundown, burning the midnight oil, exhausting myself for the cause of Christ. And from the mentality that I was operating in was a great worker. I felt like if we were just talking about business models here, the church was getting a lot of bang for their buck as far as what energy I was putting into it. But when I left, those works stopped too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that's the tragedy of the thing. Yeah. And if you're going to do something that's going to last, you've got to work in tandem with your elders, and your elders have got to be the ones to sort of light the fire and instigate. And I'm sort of backup. I'm really support staff, and I can plug in where they need me to. But the training of members to do work is a lot harder, I think, and it just takes a lot of time to build up. And you talk about mentoring. I had people that said, "Oh, I would love to be with you when you're on a Bible study." Okay, great. Well, I'll call you. Well, I'll call them. I've got a Bible study. I can't make it today. You know,
yeah.
It to get the schedules to line up is just near impossible.
Yep.
And I'm not saying we shouldn't keep trying, but at some point, we all had our first Bible study where we flew solo. Mm-hmm. And how are you going to get started if you don't do it?
Right.
You got to get in there and do it.
You know, one of the things you said in there is even, you know, to the Mount Vernon congregation, the eldership, the leadership here, they've been very focused on getting a lot of works going over the past years. And, you know, a lot of what we're doing now is because of their good leadership, and then having people that are able and ready and willing to serve has created lots of opportunity. But one of the things also that you mentioned in there, you know, some Sundays being able to just sit and listen to a class. That's one of the things that I really enjoy is that, you know, alternating Sundays, mm-hmm. we have that opportunity, you know, just to sit, to listen, to be edified. You know, when we were going through Brown Trail, through the School of Preaching, Heath would send us out every Sunday. You get a text midweek, hey, I need you here, I need you there, I need you here, right?
Feels so bad for those congregations because those lessons we were putting out were not much of a lesson.
Well, you know, the deal that it was the first time it ever hit me was when we were doing that, when it would be, you know, Sunday after Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. I told my wife one day, I said, I never really thought about this, but I feel as if I'm missing out on my own being edified, right? You know, we have our study time that goes into those lessons, but having that opportunity to just sit back on a Sunday and listen to a lesson versus preaching every single lesson, it has great benefit.
You have been listening to That You May Grow, a podcast brought to you by the Mount Vernon Church of Christ in Mount Vernon, Texas. This has been the first of two episodes that will focus on preaching, teaching, and evangelism with Brother Kevin Rhodes from the Brown Trail School of Preaching and Brother Chris Groda from the North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas. Join us again in our next episode as we will continue this discussion of preaching, teaching, and evangelism.